Today on The Sports Influence, we've got David Hong. Multiple European junior badminton medals, one of the smartest people I know, and now crushing it in Canary Wharf at one of the world's biggest banks. And just put it this way, he's always known he was great.
I'm a god.
David, 你说已经过得怎么样呢?
我还可以,你怎么样? 你的中文进步很大。
I want to know your sporting journey.
Yeah.
How did it start?
My whole family's always played it. So, I just grew up into it because my dad loved it. And then my brothers played it. And naturally, it's like, so I've got two older brothers. So naturally, I just got involved from an early age. Initially hated it, to be fair. It was pretty gross. I don't know if have any of you ever like got coaching from your parents? Because that's like...
Not as much, to be fair.
Yeah.
I haven't had much coaching from my parents, but I can imagine badminton. It's not like your football or your rugby. It's quite lonely.
Well, it's one-to-one, so it's not a team sport. So when I'm training with my dad, it would have just been... I mean, I would have been training with my siblings, but it's like my dad, me on the other side, and he's like feeding me. Like what I'll be doing to you guys later. You know, you'll get a little taste of it. It's quite intense. It's quite personal. It's that there's no hiding.
I can imagine. How did you find that training with your dad?
It's really weird. And I think it would be a really interesting thing to speak to like various people about, like the coach-player relationship. So... Yeah, I mean, they're just a little bit more harsh because it's your kid and you can say whatever you want. So there was plenty of like crying when I was a kid. He'd give you a forfeit and I'd just like run around the sports hall just like crying.
that's so relatable though, because you know, when I was at school, I remember this one time we were sat at the dinner table and my brother was doing his maths homework.
Mm.
Bawling his eyes out.
No, I had plenty of that as well.
So I can imagine it's similar. You're running around doing suicides in this just bawling your eyes out.
Yeah, so no escape. So I'm doing the maths at home and crying, and then we're gonna go play badminton and I'm gonna cry as well.
Yeah.
And then we're just like, I don't know, growing up as well, my brothers were getting a lot of the attention when I was younger because like they were doing quite well. So when I first started, I'd just be like standing there, just like holding a position to you, like just there, like sobbing,
ready to go.
yeah. No, but like you're trying to like train muscle memory for like a overhead position. So my dad would just make me stand there for like, you know, 5-10 minutes, and that, you know, hurt your arms.
But why did your dad get you into badminton? Is he a bit of a weapon himself?
I mean, he was completely self-taught, and I guess it's one of those where your parents find a love for a sport, but they obviously start too late to be like really good. But then they have this idea of, oh yeah, I know a lot about this sport. I'm going to
Project Mbappe.
Yeah, exactly. it is exactly that.
This is like Project Lindan.
Yeah. That's good knowledge there. That's some good research.
No, I know that from school.
Really?
Yeah, like I just remember talking about Lindan in like computer science. So. Back to your childhood, because obviously we know each other from young.
Yeah.
So I think, talk about how us two met, because I feel like that was a marker in time. Yeah.
Well, when I was younger, the reason why I started swimming where I met Shay is because of my coach thought my CV wasn't good enough. So to supplement my training, they wanted me to do like CV. Yeah. So the reason I started swimming was two reasons. One, CV. My badminton coaches thought I needed to improve my CV. And the other thing was I was actually like quite scared of the water as a kid because my brothers used to like pick on me when I was like...
That's a classic.
No, literally.
Classic relationship.
Like my mum used to go to like the Virgin Active. It was a Virgin Active back then in Derby. And she used to go and do her like sessions and then just leave us to go to the swimming pool. And my brothers would just like try and drown me and stuff because they could swim and I couldn't.
That is mental.
So they would just come over and like pull me down and just like, but they were so clever with it as well. Do you remember like the floats?
Yeah.
So what my brother used to do is he used to like go up underneath it, make a little air pocket and then glide over to me and then just like try and suffocate me underwater. So I developed a bit of like a phobia of water. And then, my mum was like, okay, I've got a good idea. If you're scared of water, I'll just make you join a swimming club. So I joined, and that's where I'm trying to think of the first time I met you, because we weren't in the same sessions at all.
No, but I remember clearly. It was
because I was in Louis.
We used to do that 7:30 till 9 a.m. Yeah. swim.
It was on the weekend.
At Moorways. Saturday morning.
Yeah, Saturday.
Walking into that grungy little Moorways swimming pool change room.
Yeah.
And you were there getting changed.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I used to have a technique. Yeah. I used to have a, like, my technique to get changed was I used to put my towel in my teeth like this. And like just like put on my boxers like this, but obviously it wasn't really because I've got.
It wasn't really protective.
Yeah, it wasn't really.
You know how everyone used to tie themselves with them towels.
Yeah.
David used to just have his towel hanging from his mouth, so there was no. It was explicit.
Yeah. Do you actually think that's quite a British thing? Because I don't know if you've been like when you're doing international meets.
Do you remember in Germany, Shay? We did a meet in Germany, and we were shocked.
They're so casual.
Because there was people leg spread. Sat on the floor, completely naked. I was like, never seen anything like this in my life.
Yeah.
The UK's just so, like, they just cover themselves up for everything. And I remember the first place I noticed it was different was when I went to Brooks.
Yeah.
Or, like, when I went to Henley with Rowan.
Yeah.
And everyone was just walking out of these showers, like, naked.
Yeah.
And I was just like, because we've been brought up, obviously everyone else was, like, comfortable with it because they were used to it. But because we were brought up at swimming where it was, everyone just covered up.
Yeah.
I walked in, I was so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm just covering up.
I remember it like quite a lot because it was those international tournaments that we was doing. So I started playing for England when I was like 12, 13. And then you go abroad, there'll be older lads, there'd be like different countries, and they'd all just be like these big guys. I mean, like really tall guys. I mean, really tall guys. But they would all just be there like hanging it out. And like, I was uncomfortable, but I saw it as like, we're competing. But it was like a mental thing, like because everyone else, all the other English guys as well, would just like they'd go shower in their boxers or something.
Yeah.
But I was just like, nah, I'm not like if they're all out there freeballing, I'm freeballing. Do you know what I mean? Because I don't want to go into the shower and like face my competitors who are just freewheeling.
It's mind games.
It's mind games. These are the you know, this makes the boat go faster. Do you know what I mean? It's all them little games. Mm. But I really thought about it like that. So
you're saying the UK as well that everyone covers up. But there's always that one guy. Two guys.
Yeah, they're older and they're always older.
Do not care.
It's when you show up. Oh my God.
It's when you show up,
right? Family pool.
Family pool.
The family pool at Queen's Leisure Centre on a Wednesday night about 8:30 p.m. A bunch of young people swimming.
Yeah.
You go into the change rooms after the session, there's a 75-year-old guy in there.
Yeah.
Just having a shower, stark naked.
Yeah, he's hung though. He's hung. He's like, they always are. Swear that. Do you reckon you get a boost when you go past like 70 or something?
The thing is, that Queen Street pool, it was almost like a very public swimming
pool.
Anyone walked in there to go for a shower. So what you found was, I found, is you got all sorts of people off the street going in for a shower.
Yeah.
So there's all these kids that have just done the swimming session.
I never thought about that.
All sorts of people in those showers having a shower.
I never thought about that.
The drain just clogged up with all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah.
But, so talk us through your progression through swimming.
Yeah.
And kind of making badminton national team. I just want to hear a bit of story.
Yeah. So swimming, to be fair, I didn't really have any notable achievements apart from I came second at City of Derby, Club Champs Gala. That was huge, to be fair.
That was big. I was training twice a week.
And
the odds on that were...
Yeah, no. Bro, I remember they weren't happy. Like, the mums were chatting about, he shouldn't be in lane five. That's what they were hearing. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I just gave him a little shh at the end.
It was so unexpected, to be fair.
I think I nearly missed the wall on my tumble turn. I think I touched and gained.
That was good. And you do like to say that you beat me
I actually did.
Listen to this.
I genuinely beat you.
So what happened?
It was like inter school.
It seems to be like a massive event in your life. I seem to have had a massive impact.
You brought it up. No, I did beat you. What was it? 18 meters.
The thing is,
you normally beat me on the turn, and the thing is, brute strength. I obviously just had you because I was quite built as like in year seven. Was it year seven?
To be fair, you weren't that big.
So I think it was just. Did we go in or was we going? Was it like a relay? I don't remember.
No, it was just one length as fast as you can. Did you ever swim at Woodland Swimming Pool?
Woodland Swimming Pool, absolute sweatbox.
It wasn't
25 metres either.
No,
it was
18.
It was like 18.
So that's exactly what I wanted. That's exactly what I needed.
Yeah, so on the backstroke, you have to be careful. Otherwise, you whack your head on if you went off the normal strokes.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely scenes in that pool.
So I think, were we allowed to dive? I don't think we were.
We did dive.
We dive in, and obviously I'm just like, no breath, just going for one of these. And then towards the end, I just see myself gaining on Shay. And I just see him dropping back. I see the panic in his face. I swear to God, he looked at me under the water. And I just know I've got him. And I touch him out. And the flag goes up, I've won.
I genuinely am glad it's had such a massive impact on your life. Because
you definitely
didn't win. And I'm glad it's made you who you are today. This lie you've been told.
Yeah.
But...
yeah, on the badminton side, I don't know. Yeah, so I started playing for England when I was about under... 13, I think. My first tournaments for England were under 13. I played like a lot of internationals, riff-raff. I played with my dad a bit, and then I was getting good at county, and then I got my first like proper coach, James Boxall, who was like an ex-England player, and he'd started coaching. So I started training with him. I got noticed by DIS. Shout out DIS. Derbyshire Institute of Sport. So it was it was quite a new thing back then. They were taking on a lot of, I think it was like London 2012 funding, and they were essentially sponsoring a lot of athletes to do like S&C work, nutrition. So I joined them. They were really helpful for like everything outside of on court. So I got a lot of good input in terms of like nutrition, how to get stronger. Like, I don't know if you remember, but back then people were saying like, you know, if you're under 18, you shouldn't be lifting weights and all that. But we had like a lot of good like S&C guys who'd studied all this stuff, who were like, yeah, that's nonsense, you want to make sure you're not getting injured and all this stuff. So that was like, when I talked to my brother, I think that's one of the biggest benefits that I got out it of like sport, is that early exposure to the gym and fitness from like real knowledgeable people who were doing this for a living. Like, even within elite sport, I think you sometimes forget my badminton coach, he's really knowledgeable about badminton, but he's not really knowledgeable about life in general. You know what I mean? He's just really good at badminton.
Yeah.
So he's going to tell you like, oh, if you do push-ups, you're gonna become like Arnold Schwarzenegger or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? He just thinks like you're going to do one squat and then like not be able to move. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think that even that lesson was really useful. But yeah, I learned about the gym, learned about like nutrition, those things. That's really like, that's something that's definitely stayed with past badminton. And but yeah, around this kind of time, I started getting good results. I was always one of the top few players in my age group, and we always competed really well in Europe. So I was always meddling in Europe, got like under 15, I think I got a bronze at Euros. Maybe we got a bronze in the team as well. Don't really care about the team though, do you? Under 17, I got like a silver at Euros. And all this time I'm competing for England. And I'm still on there's like an England program, so I'm part of that program. And then by the time I get to about under 19, like there are like a couple people who are a similar standard. And then essentially I just get pipped by one guy. Like they started doing stuff off of like certain results, and I missed the program by like, I had this like one tournament in Belgium or something, and I was literally playing against the other people for like this program spot. It was like, I forget if it was a final or semi-final. And like, if I win that, then I'm on for another 2 years. If I lose it, you're gone. And I lose it like 21-19 in the third. And my partner, who'd made the program, I think he just felt so bad afterwards. Like, obviously I felt bad, but he was like, he'd already been on the program and he thought, oh, I made a couple mistakes. And like, but yeah, it was brutal. Like, you just do all of that training, and then one day it was like, you're not getting funded anymore. And that was massive for me at the time, because I couldn't necessarily, like, there was ways you could pay and keep training and potentially go full time, but you know, I kind of was in the mindset, look, if I'm not even good enough for them to fund me, am I realistically going to make a career out of it? Because there's not necessarily a lot of money in badminton, especially when I was growing up. So you kind of was like, if you're not going to be top 10, top 20 in the world, you're kind of just going to be some any guy who just like, you know, does a bit and then yeah. You don't have a degree, you don't have any career prospects. So that's when that whole thing came into it, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite hard, isn't it, badminton? It's a bit like the other kind of single sports because you haven't got like the setup of like, you know, like in football, you've got Premier League, Championship,
yeah.
League One, League Two, League Three, League Four. They're all getting paid.
Right? Yeah, yeah. You can make a living.
You've got 20 people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's
yeah.
it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Go on, sorry.
No, I was going to say, I think we skipped the selection process to actually get in
right.
to the squad. Like,
yeah.
How did that go down? Was it like competitive?
It was very like results-based. So they have to justify, there is some subjectivism in it. And that's where it's quite different to obviously like, I'd say swimming or like any athletics where you're just doing trials, time trials, fastest person goes. So like every selection, there'd be people appealing it, but like they would never ever win appeals. Like I've seen so many appeals, literally every selection, someone's unhappy. And especially these like mums and dads in like badminton, they're just like, I'll say my parents never appealed anything, but like there were people like, I don't even know, it would be so funny if some of these people see it, but like some parents were like doing like lawsuits and like suing, and to be fair the whole program has changed now because they were like genuinely just they'd get so angry about selection. So there was a decent amount of because you can do it off results to a point, but then a coach could also say, oh, for juniors I'm going to select these like 16-year-olds because I think they've got longer term potential. Even though the 18-year-olds are better, they have the ability to go like long term, I think I want to invest in these guys more. So I remember as a kid I did get selected above a couple people a couple years older or a year older, just because they were like, well, if they're about the same level, why don't I take the younger lad who's potentially going to be better. So it was mainly results. Like I was top, you know, I was like silver at nationals or like just constantly meddling or like winning things. So I think, yeah, that's how I first got selected. But it's definitely a bit of a snowball thing. Once you're on the program, you're like a program player. And then like they throw like resources at you. Whereas the people below are just like nothing.
Yeah,
but like, you definitely get this elitist mentality. It is mental. I don't know if you guys relate to that at all, but like when you're, I don't know how it is in, yeah.
Yeah,
but
it is that bit of that elitist mentality in Rome as well. Because you've got the unis that you got like your Oxfords, your Cambridge, your Durhams, and everyone else that's in the other unis has got no equipment to play with.
Yeah.
You've got like top spec telemetry on their boats, like measuring every little bit of power. And like when you're at St. Andrews, your boat's just outside the river. You've got to rig it up.
Yeah.
Every session.
No, the selection thing is like a massive topic. Like it's crazy.
Really?
Yeah. Like every year, like the people in charge will make like dubious decisions and people are fuming and like.
But I was going to say, parents appealing things, I don't agree with that at all because sport as a child, it's also about teaching kids a lesson. I'm not a parent myself, obviously.
Yeah.
I feel like even if your kids don't get picked for something, that's almost like, it's got its pluses to it as well. They're going to learn to get rejected, go through that hard time.
Yeah.
You don't, I feel like if you're appealing stuff at that age as well, how old were you at this point?
I don't know, 12, 13.
Exactly. You're not going to get in your prime till in badminton at what, 28?
Something like that. Yeah, about right. Yeah. No, that's really interesting. I think I've had so many conversations about parents in sport before. Be interested to get your thoughts, but I think, like a lot of these parents, right, who are appealing, they've never done sport to a really high level.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So you've got that perspective because you're like, you can really see the value in all the ups and downs. And you've seen that process and like, you know, what, like as people now who aren't playing sport to a high level, you can extract all the things that are worth something. Whereas, you know, for a lot of these parents, they are just like living through their kids a little bit and they've got no idea about what like high level sport, you know, it's like. So they're just out here just saying whatever. Oh, they won this one thing, so they should go. That like they're really don't really understand it at all. Like, I'd say at all. Like extra specially don't understand.
You've not got a leg to stand on in badminton, right? In rowing, you've got seven other people in the boat. If you don't get selected, you can almost, like, appeal it and say, you know, someone else, you know, messed up or something.
Mm.
In badminton, you've got no hiding.
Yeah.
It's all you, you know?
Yeah.
If you've not made it, you've not made it because of yourself, but you can't blame it on anyone else.
What I used to say, and when I got dropped, my kind of mentality was like, in my opinion, like the way they dropped me was actually mental. Actually, this is like, so under 17. So I was under 17 going into under 18, and like Euros comes around every 2 years. So they call me up, or like they release a team. I'm on the team. So there's like an individuals and there's a team. And originally I'm on for both. And then just literally a couple months out, they call me and they go, oh, hey, I know we said you're in the team, but like, we don't have a partner for you. Like, we don't, I don't know, what do you mean? Like, I'm a doubles and mixed player. Like, I was playing doubles and mixed at the time. And they're like, yeah, we just don't have a partner for you. We're just going to play. I was like, so I'm in the team, but you don't have a partner. And it's like, yeah, you can still come though and play in the team event or something. And I was like, I was so like angry at that point. I was just like, no, fuck you guys. I'm not playing. Because I was like in this super elite mentality. Yeah, yeah. Thinking back, I would have just gone wherever on holiday for a bit and just had like a great laugh. Yeah. You know what I mean? I was like under 19, 17, 18 year old lad going abroad, having like, you know, it would have been sick. But I was so like siloed. I was like, I can't believe you've disrespected me to this point.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm like top quality player. There's no way I'm just going to come and play your team event.
Yeah.
But I wish I went back and just played that shit. On that point, I feel like when you're on the fringe, then you might get shagged on a decision, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, because I was like the fifth, sixth guy, I was like, oh, I should have been picked, shouldn't have been picked, and you can be angry. But like the top dog, you know,
there's no
like,
question.
He's never like, oh, I've been shagged. Yeah. It's always the guys on the edges.
I always
like,
think it's,
oh, this is so unfair.
It's that same saying, and that, to be fair, I've been liking it. I've been liking it recently. It's, you make your own luck,
yeah.
Right? If you're that top dog or one of those top three, you don't even have to depend on whether you're going to get shagged up.
Yeah, yeah.
You're making the team regardless. So it's like,
100%.
I've been in positions like at Brooks when I was rowing or swimming or whatever,
where
it's like a toss up or it depends on someone's opinion or luck or whatever. But if you are one of those top dogs, you don't have to worry about that.
And in my head, I genuinely felt like I want to be one of those guys. So if they don't select me, I'm not gonna cry about it. I'm just gonna get on. Mm. And in this case, I end up quitting. but like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. That's so fair though, because I remember, like, because obviously we went to school together, and we used to do badminton in PE. And obviously, like tactically, I was always like, yeah, David's my doubles partner.
Badminton PE was so funny because like obviously the teachers knew that I was good and they would come and ask me and I think you got like a 25 because I said Shay's like 25 out of 25.
He's
like 25 out of 25.
On the PE.
On the GCSE.
Yeah, David was like,
they'd ask me because like obviously I know more about it and then they'd watch me like play against these guys and like I'd take it easy or something and they'd be like, yeah, they're really good. But it's interesting because in the back of their mind, they know that, do you remember moderation? Do you remember what moderation is?
Yeah, I remember.
So they'd get a bunch of like kids from different schools to make sure they're grading evenly. So obviously they're going to send me in as they are 25 out of 25 and no one's going to question anything about anyone else's grades. So they can just like give everyone 25. So I don't know. It was good fun though.
So I think we should just talk about school a little bit.
Yeah.
Just because we obviously spent some 6 years.
Six years
every single day together.
Yeah.
Same classes.
Yeah.
Not the same form, but like basically in the same set for everything almost all the way through. How did you find your time at school and how did you find balancing school with badminton?
I don't know. I don't know what you'll say, but I feel like I only properly studied maybe for like, I'd say 6 months from year 7 to year 13.
I probably
did 6 months of proper study. I reckon like 3 months before GCSEs. Or did we do?
I think
I remember studying for A-levels.
Genuinely,
I don't remember studying
for GCSEs. Locked in for 3 months before it.
You specifically did. I remember
that was it.
I remember your predicted grades were like terrible.
A D and an E.
Yeah, yeah. They wouldn't even give him passes. Like.
But the thing that's it was only because I stopped swimming that I felt like to be fair, it's all meant like mindset now. I look back. Like I obviously did have the effort and the time to study like I did, but it's only when I stopped swimming that I felt like I could funnel all of that energy I was putting into swimming into my studies. Yeah. So it was almost like a swap. All the energy I was putting into swimming, I put into my studies. Yeah. But yeah, carry on.
I think as a kid, I was quite confident that I was an intelligent kid. And I just never really, I don't know, when you're a kid, you're thinking more about like having mates and like
Friday night being parties.
And being like, I don't know, making people laugh. Like I was a bit, I'll say in class, I liked like arguing with teachers a lot. I like winding them up, but I'd do it in a smart way.
I'd do it in a stupid way. I'd be the one getting sent out where David would just be in there chuckling to us.
I'd do the questions, right? I'd make sure I've got all the answers and then I'll start chatting shit and they'll be like, David, do you even know what I'm talking about? And then I'll be like, yes, I do. And then they used to get so mad, but I don't know. Yeah, we've had some funny
such
times.
Such good times.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm trying to think of...
You could get that video. You could chuck up a...
Oh, the history video.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If I can find a clip of it, I'll put it in. But when we were in year 9...
Yeah, did a little
year
YouTube
9,
video.
We did a little YouTube video for history. I think I was like Plato.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And David was like
Socrates.
Socrates. Yeah. And we were just talking about how being these,
what were we talking about?
We were talking about philosophy and how I came up with this philosophical idea and David came up with this other one, mate. It was like, it's so good. But if I can find it, I'll link it here.
Conclude that everyone's sick in it. We conclude that Greeks are the founders. No, Greeks are the daddy and Romans are their son.
But
I think that was one of the only... Who was it, Miss? Was it the one who
Jones?
Was always crying? Do you remember that? If you think back, like kids are pricks. Yeah. Kids are absolute pricks. Yeah. I was one of them, if I'm on.
Oh, I was bad. Yeah. Sometimes I look back and I feel bad.
I'll actually counter that because I was thinking about this the other day. I don't agree because why were teachers like full shouting at like 13-year-old girls? Just like imagine I'm like a little kid. I've come into school and my shirt's untucked. And then Mr. Morse just in my face, like, in America, like people are getting shot. Like, did I deserve that for having my shirt untucked? Like, he was just like screaming at you. Like, I think it's a bit of give and take. I think some of those teachers were genuine.
Some of them were a little bit antagonized.
Yeah, yeah.
Like sometimes I'd walk into Mr. Murden's math class, right? And don't get me wrong, I was a bit of a knob back in the day. I used to get on him like quite a lot, but some days I walk in and I'll be ready for a relaxed lesson. I'm ready to lock in.
Shay, get out.
He's on me.
Is he the one who just used to like Shay, get out?
Yeah, I wouldn't even. I'd sit down. I'd have a little bit.
Yeah, you used to do Shay, get out.
It's just like I'd be trying my best.
Yeah. I remember one time when it was in maths, and this is like, I think when we were younger we were little shits, but like when we're getting older, like we're starting to do. Like properly locking in, and I was never like a bad kid. I was just a bit annoying and like, or whatever. But I remember just like we're in sixth form now. Everyone's serious. We're all in suits. I go into Mr. Jones' maths lesson, and I'm like, it's a couple minutes before lesson, and I'm like, oh sir, is it all right? Should we just nip to the toilet? And he's like, oh no, David. And I was just like, what? I did that out of politeness, but I'm gonna go toilet. I'm like 17 years old at this point, and I'm in a suit. I'm not getting told I can't go for a wee-wee 2 minutes before session. And those things just get to you. Like, what do you mean, no, sir? He was just, I don't know, he was someone that day.
I've been thinking recently, right? I was never on one of the top tables or whatever throughout primary school into secondary school. I was always like set 3 or 4.
Yeah.
But I ended on a high, right?
Okay.
And I think that comes down to a bit of sport and also... When you're young, you don't know how to channel your energy and that side of things. So you're disrupting the class.
Mm.
I was the same, especially like a group of lads.
And
But then when you realize what you should be directing your, you know, your disruptive energy towards, you can perform way better than the people that are like just all the time they have no sport going on outside of school or anything. They're just always working. But you've almost got that motivation because you're not burnt out. You're just like ready to go, channel it in. You can burn out 3 months of pure grind. And you get the same grades, if not better.
I think it's a really, really interesting point. I think it's really interesting. I thought the exact same thing when I was at school because I remember doing better than like a lot of people who had really high predicted grades.
You know what I'm going to say?
Yeah, go on.
That article.
Oh, yeah. We had this article in the Derby Telegraph like for the results and they do like all the A stars.
We were the ones getting like everyone thought.
Yeah.
Count us out.
And I think, it was like, it came to the Woodlands like bit and they just mentioned all the A-star students and I think there were five A-star students.
And three of them were me, David, and
me, you, and it was, we were just there, it was just, literally us three and out of like a whole year, I don't know how many people know, 100, 200.
One A-star.
Yeah, just one A-star. That's get you, to, yeah, to get in the Telegraph.
One A-star.
It's Derby. It's a big deal. Like, one A-star's a big deal. Yeah, it's a big deal, mate.
Yeah, not at the end. He went
the newspaper wasn't that long. It wasn't that long, you know. It's like a half bit. But yeah, that was really cool. But the point was, there was a lot of people in those classes who were getting higher predicted grades than me, who were getting like a lot of good feedback from the teachers all the time. And I think those people would have just been cruising. Do you know what I mean? They was just always cruising. No, but they just never
coasting.
Well, and then maybe they got a bit of pressure at the end. Whereas for me or for us at least, it was like I know where I'm at and it's bad, and I'm just gonna knuckle it down, smash through, and I'm gonna crunch through these exams. Like you have that me versus like this obstacle, right? Whereas if you've gone through school just like always getting really good feedback and all of this stuff, I don't know, actually it would be interesting. I definitely think, in fact, they told us this when we were doing sport, that you can draw people who've done sports to a high level typically outperform in academics and university, secondary school and university.
About jobs as well.
I think there is a correlation, and I think it's down to the premise of this podcast, how sports influences you as a person, is I think it comes down to mainly accountability. Number one, you learn from a young age how hard work and everything is just going to directly influence your results. And then secondly, just discipline and motivation. You're going to have to get out of bed at a certain time to train or whatever. And then that bleeds into getting out of bed to go to work or forcing yourself to go to
work. Definitely. Definitely. I definitely noticed that since you boys are in audit, aren't you?
Yeah.
So when I first left uni, I went into more of like a sales startup job where you're doing like a lot of recruitment. And a lot of the people who were doing well there were also people who'd done sport to a high level. And I think specifically in a competitive environment, like in a commission-based setting, I think sports people, you've dealt with pressure before, I'd say. Like you've dealt with, like you're not afraid of the flames. You've been there before at least. Like some love it, but you're at least familiar with it, right? And that's how you end up getting good at performing, is like dealing with that pressure. So I think that's a massive thing that translates. And I've spoken to someone about this quite a lot, but like the coachability as well. Like you can take feedback and understand, oh, that's just because I need to get better at that. I've probably done something wrong. Whereas I feel like a lot of people who've not done sport will take things in a very personal way, like feedback, like, oh, I'm a terrible person, or like, he's attacking me. Whereas like the amount of times we've been told, oh, this isn't good enough, and there's no space in sport for like, oh, maybe they think I'm not good enough. Like you have to be like, okay, yeah, I need to develop that, and I need to develop that, and that's something that's going to make me better.
Yeah, or they just don't react. Yeah. See it at work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, managers will get annoyed, and they won't pick you for their jobs or whatever, because they've given you feedback. They've left 20, 30 review notes.
Yeah.
And you do the same things again.
Yeah.
And the manager's like, oh, you know, can I be bothered to, do I want this person on my team again?
No.
But yeah, definitely to be able to react is crucial.
I think sport is definitely massive. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a little devil's advocate thing. Like, Imagine I was literally just thinking this. This is my first time I've ever thought of this thought. But like, imagine if you're doing sport to a high level, that probably means you have somewhat supportive parents, right? So like, if your parents have won the time to spend on you, to like take you to all these sessions, to be there, like even if like they've got onto you about something, they're essentially in your corner. They want the best for you because they're like waking up at 5 a.m. for you and driving you to more ways or whatever. Do you think with that kind of support system, with parents who have the time, the money, the energy to put into that kids, like that's a massive difference compared to like the whole population of people who, you know, maybe the parents don't really care that much what the kids get up to after 100%. School and all of that.
Well, so there's definitely a correlation.
Yeah.
100%, because I think all of us probably have very supportive parents when we were growing up.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a correlation between how supportive your parents are and maybe how much time they spend taking you to sports clubs when you're younger, taking you to training and different things. So I do think that probably has a massive impact.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of correlation as well between the sport and almost your parents as well, because we spoke a little bit about this before, and football, for example.
Yeah.
You almost don't need supportive parents to do that because you go down to the local park. And there's going to be one within 200, 300 metres of your house. Whereas badminton, you got to get driven to a court.
Yeah.
So you got to get to a court or wherever. Swimming, you've got to get to a swimming. Rowing, you've got to get to the rowing ground. So it's almost, it'll be interesting to find out who the kids that were like really good at football back in school, where they've gone to. Where, you know, everyone takes different routes, but in comparison to the people that had a sport which required a lot of input from the parents and stuff.
Yeah.
Because then it was almost a slot, 1 to 7 to 8 in the evening, you had to be at that swimming pool.
Yeah.
And your parents would make you go.
Yeah.
I spoke about this before, like when I was like, you know, you go out on your bike and you're not doing that side. Hey, Mrs. Smith, like, is Jerry there to play?
We're the last generation who's really doing that, by the way. Like knocking on your bike. That's crazy.
I wouldn't know where your mates were. Yeah. You'd go around everyone's house. Oh, so the one house where all the bikes were outside. Yeah. You were like, yes,
I remember one time when I tried to come find you guys and you were like, you were supposed to be at Brandon's. Do you remember that? Was it Darley Park? I remember.
No, I remember.
Because I never had a phone.
I felt bad.
I never had a phone. So yeah. I lived in,
someone else's phone and started messaging me on Facebook.
Yeah.
No, because we were in town and we were going to Duffield Carnival.
Yeah. Duffield Carnival. That's what it was.
And you messaged, David was got like Bethan's phone or something.
What?
Or like someone's phone, because you found someone from our school in town messaging on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I was like, I felt so bad, but like, it's not like that now.
Yeah.
Everyone's just hopping on Fortnite or Minecraft or whatever it is. But like, but they don't know what it's like.
I was
to
like
go
cycling
down
around all of Derby, just like going between people's houses and be like, oh, is Brandon in? And she's like, oh, no, he went already. And I was just like,
they don't know what it's like to go to Mark Eaton Park
and
spend 8 hours playing basketball.
Yeah.
But quickly talking about the basketball at Mark Eaton Park, just how that's
what
means.
Slapping you off.
No, because this guy's always got so much chat. Basically, how it used to go down at Mark Eaton Park is...
That's not even true. You didn't even win that much, I'll be honest with you. I'll be honest, you didn't really have that dog in you, I'll be honest.
All right, so talk about how Mark Eaton Park's influenced you.
I don't know, it's just... It's influenced me in a way, like, I've realised that even if you come up against someone who seems to have a lot of advantages over you, like height, like, they've been blessed with it, with, like, if you really got that dog in you, then you can beat them. You know what I mean? And the mental side is crazy because I used to be able to just look in his eyes, Shay. Yeah, I used to be able to just look him in the eyes and see he didn't really need to win the way I did. Do you know what I mean? Like
yeah,
he could just drop the ball in the basket, but like he's gonna have to get through me in the post. And yeah, I'm like half his size, but I've got that passion that he didn't. Definitely.
What comes down to.
Definitely.
And you, I'm not gonna lie, your mind games were solid.
Yeah, no, 100%.
I remember he's obviously had like years of practice with badminton. I'd be
You don't have that. You don't have that because you're underwater.
I was just underwater. I don't have that practice, but I'd be stood there with the ball and it'd just be yapping away, yapping at me. And
I still do that when I play for fun.
He does. What we did, we were doing something. We went to play table tennis at some point at Derby Uni.
Yeah.
Giving it chat.
Now, the thing is, I do get in your head though. Like, I get, remember table tennis? Like, you used to get so angry that I used to beat you. Like,
do you think that's because you have brothers? Because I would say I'm a wind-up merchant. Yeah. I can wind someone up if I want to. I think it's because I've got an older sister and a younger brother.
No,
I know how to wind up my sister, and vice versa, I know how to wind up my brother.
Yeah. No, I think it definitely is.
Especially, it's a valuable asset.
Especially because I had two older brothers who were physically bigger than me. So I had to find a way to beat them, not physically. So I had to outsmart them. Like, I remember this is, like, Josh brings this up every time, but, like, I used to go up to him and, like, punch him in the shoulder and then run off and go, "Mom, Josh is hitting me," just to preload it, because I know he's about to beat me up. So, like, he's going to see red, because Josh would get angry, and he's going to run after me. My mum's going to come streaming around the corner and see Josh laying into me. And, like, she's just going to catch him right before I get fucked up, and then I can just be like, got you.
No, it's so true, because my brother was the exact same. He used to just have to wind me up all the time, because Corin, if he's watching this, he'll remember this, and my parents will remember this as well. There was one night where I was sat in the living room with my mum and my dad, and my brother just shouts down the stairs. He goes, "Mom, Shay just hit me. Shay just hit me." And I was just sat in the living room.
That's so class. That's so class.
It's the same. All younger brothers do it. I'm assuming your brother did similar stuff.
For me, the dynamic was my sister was almost top of the food chain because she had my dad's, like,
favoritism. Yeah.
So it was a question of who could win over my little brother in an argument to get them on their side, because two against one.
Really? Oh, it's like that?
My sister would be telling pure lies to my brother.
Okay.
So I'll be speaking the pure facts. Like, no, I'm telling the truth. Like, listen to me.
That's so funny. That's so funny that your little brother's ended up like...
Yeah, exactly.
Whoever gets a Phoenix win.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously you've made the big move to the city now.
Yeah.
That wasn't... You said you worked in sales for...
Yeah.
Where are you at now?
So I moved to London like 3 years ago, started off ProSapient doing sales and recruitment, got promoted a few times. And then, to be honest, I had a chat with my manager, found out that his pay was based on like the team. And because I was an individual contributor and I was doing really well, I realized that my next progressive move wouldn't necessarily make me more money, because I'd go into like management rather than purely being based off of commission. So I was kind of like, I'm good at this, but it's a lot of input for what I'm getting. So it's not like, you're not really increasing the value of your time. You're just like, I'm putting in loads of time and effort and getting rewarded for it. But it doesn't really scale that much, even though the company, like the idea of the company is to grow, but I kind of was looking around and I just thought, I'm not really sure if like, you know, no, there's loads of stuff, but essentially I was like, let me go into something, get some proper groundwork in. So I was applying for anything like financy and anything like consulting wise, because I was like, that's just what people do. I had no idea at uni, to be fair. I had no idea about like career paths or anything. I was very clueless. I didn't do a lot of like, I didn't do any internships, anything like that. So I got kind of lucky. I got a finance grad program at a bank in Canary Wharf, and so that was like a massive pivot for me, and I had no idea what to expect. But it's been I must have applied to like 200 plus jobs. Like I must have applied to like 200
job market.
Yeah,
the job market is crazy. I mean, 200 is mental.
Yeah,
like I did 40.
Yeah.
And landed one. Yeah. I did 40-ish, but again, I'm not in London, different. Yeah. But 200, I think the job market at the minute's mental. But again, I don't know if it's somewhat related that you had the determination to knock out 200 applications, whether that's kind of a little bit influenced by your upbringing through sport and learning that.
No, I think so. I think it is a bit of a... It's a bit of, I think that actually came more from the sales side a little bit. Like, it's a bit of a numbers game. Mm. Like, I feel like once you get to interview, you're within a decent shot. But the amount of jobs that will just like reject you straight up. And I think, you just never get the chance. So you just have to pump up the numbers and be willing. To be fair, maybe I wasn't doing it in a super targeted way. Like, I just didn't have a lot of understanding or knowledge. So I was probably applying for a bunch of stuff that I was just not qualified for at all. But I was just like, I don't know, apply. You know, apply.
The LinkedIn Easy apply.
I did do a couple of them. I did quite a lot of them. Yeah, yeah.
LinkedIn Easy apply.
There's jobs on LinkedIn, and all you have to do is press.
We're not sponsored by them, by the way.
Yeah. Other job searches are available. but
if you want to sponsor us, feel free.
All you have to press is apply through LinkedIn or something like that, and it just like. It's just like AI, it's just straight, it does your profile like, into their system or something like that.
Yeah, because one thing I kind of liked it because it was always a logic and number games that you had to do before when you were applying.
For grad jobs.
For grad jobs.
Yeah.
You had to do that, the logic games or the assessment centers. And I used to love it.
Yeah.
Because I'd do the games and I realized... quite a lot of companies use the same, they use the same platform.
Yeah.
So it'd come up and I'd get like, you're in the top 99 percentile for this because I've done it 5 times already. Yeah. I was getting interviews and stuff and then I realized there was one job where you needed a master's for it and I hadn't got one.
Yeah.
And I got offered an interview.
Yeah.
And then I think they clocked that I didn't have a master's so they repealed my interview.
I was like, I
did good, well enough on the test. But again, it's just like, they have to whittle down the numbers somehow because so many people are applying for that.
You get genuinely thousands because of like the Easy Apply and stuff, and people are just like pure. Yeah, they told me there were like, I don't know, I think 6 people got on my like finance grad program, and they told me like thousands and thousands of people.
So you're one of 6.
Yeah, on my finance program. Yeah, it's like
I had some funny stories about the application process. You know when you get the higher view stuff, when you've got to record yourself answering the questions? Yeah. And used to tell, I was in a house with people that weren't necessarily that job focused.
Yeah.
So you'd be like, guys, can you keep quiet for this time in the house?
Yeah.
Next minute, they burst through the door, singing, shouting. And you're in the middle of this, you've got to keep a straight face. And they're like, you know, Joe, you're coming down. And I'm speaking like, yeah.
I've got one of my expenses. I'm
like, yeah, great guys. So I ended up just going to the college in Durham to do all my applications.
Mm.
But yeah, it helped that I did a placement year.
Yeah. So, no, that's huge. That's huge.
Yeah, it helped me massively. Yeah.
And there was, because same about the high view stuff, because there were some times where you get 3 attempts on some of them. Mm. I'd done 2 and I was like, right, okay, I need to get it right on this.
Yeah.
I get 30 seconds in and I was like,
I remember going, the laptop down.
Oh, for fuck. I just shut my laptop and walked off.
I bet also it sees you've done 3 attempts as well. And that's an instant no.
Yeah.
It wants people that are saying 1 attempt.
Yeah. It has AI because at Brooks, they have this thing where like you can practice for it and it grades you on the different things.
Yeah.
So it tracks how much eye contact you're making with the camera. It tracks how many and ahs you say. How fast you talk, how eloquent you are, and all of this. So I was practicing on the Brooks website, trying to get my score up, and then I went,
it is so nerve wracking. I've got a funny interview story. When I was coming out of uni, I went, I forgot about an interview, but I had my laptop on me. So we was going to, I don't know if you've ever been to Colwick Park in Notts, but it's like a place where everyone goes where it's really sunny. But I was with like some of my friends and it was like, we was going on a day out and I had like an interview at like 2 p.m. and I'm just sat in this car hotspotting from my phone. It was like, it was one of these days that was like 33 degrees. So I'm in my car and I'm absolutely sweating bullets, like streaming down my face. Like I'm wiping it off with a towel and I'm just like pure lying to this guy like, my Wi-Fi's overheated. So I'm in my car downstairs. I cannot drive. I'm in my car downstairs, just got the aircon on. Sorry about that. And the interview goes really well. Like my phone literally dies because it's overheated. So it's cut me off mid-interview. I've asked some guy in a van next to me that you wouldn't mind hotspotting me, would you? And he's got like one of these little, like, what they call, like modems or whatever, you know, the things that you can get Wi-Fi. And yeah, I connected up to that and finished my interview and they were like, yeah, I want you to think seriously about taking this job. And they
it's always those ones though.
Yeah, yeah, but it was mental. I was just like...
Because they'll remember.
Yeah. Maybe that's the strat.
Yeah, I remember the higher view. You start every higher view like this.
Yeah.
Showing as much white teeth as you possibly can. Because it's all about the AI these days. Yeah. Like, have you... Yeah, because... Have you tried to like uptake any AI in your work? Like, it's so hard to learn.
I did at my last company, but the thing with working at like a big bank is they move so slow. Like, there's so much regulatory stuff, so much like data stuff. So like at my last company, we had AI, well, like 2 years ago, when like ChatGPT came out, we was immediately on it, like just making little tasks easier. Like, sometimes we'd have to create lists and stuff, or like we'd just like give us a list of this, give us a list of this. And we was using AI for a lot of stuff. But then I moved to a big bank and it's like AI is completely blocked on everything. So you can't use AI. You have to use, like, they're running like a pilot program for something that's going to come out in like, I don't know, Q4 or never or something. Like, yeah. Because there's so much regulatory stuff. So I think being in a big bank is probably the last place they're going to utilize AI. When they do, it's going to be like sweeping, but like it's going to take a while. Yeah.
It's the same. We're both in audit and there's so much regulatory stuff in there.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just put clients' data in AI and stuff. So it moves so slowly.
Yeah.
And at some points you are like, oh, I could be doing this. Yeah. So this could be done by AI so easily.
Yeah. I've definitely like asked it on the side for like help, but like you couldn't, like if you sent a document or anything into that thing, you're risking your job, because those things will ping up and you'll have your MD knocking like, what's going on here? Why are you chucking this in? So you'd be, it's a bit more difficult, but I definitely was using it a lot. And I don't know. One interesting thing, actually, I was just thinking about, because it's about the sports influence and was talking about interviews. I remember, in fact, even like now, like the thing that does the best for me at interviews a lot of the time is explaining like the sports background and what I've learned from that. I've rinsed that so many times.
That's what got me my job.
People love it. Mm. People
they're
love
genuine
it.
Examples.
Yeah. But they love it. They're like, you know, I don't know why. I don't know why it is. I don't know what, I mean, I don't know why, because I feel like as someone who's done a lot of sport, I can understand, you know, I'd like to employ someone who's done sport to a high level, but like, it feels like a lot of the people who I've interviewed with have all really seen the value. I don't know if it was just the way I spoke or they genuinely like believed my examples, but yeah, it's always, you know, if someone wants to ask about teamwork and I say something like, oh yeah, it's, you know, for me it's really important being part of a team where you can be really competitive but you're also helping each other, because ultimately you can't really progress without the rest of your squad, especially in badminton, because it's like, you'll see later, like I'll try and get you guys to feed me, you won't be able to, like you guys couldn't have like give me a good session because you don't have the ability. So you have to have like people around you who are good. So there's that, you know, you explain that and they're like, yeah, that's exactly what we're looking for here at insert day. I'd imagine all of us here would agree that like sport has massively changed our lives and shaped the people we are, and like a lot of the good qualities, I'd say. Like it's fairly rare you meet someone who's done a lot of sport who's like, oh yeah, I didn't really get anything out of that. Do you know what I mean?
If you don't get anything personally, you make so many friends through sport. Like the people I live with now, all rowers, we met through sport. Yeah. I almost feel for people that don't play any sport, because I think there is a sport for everyone. Mm. Like even if you're not like that physically, like to do like rowing, they say you have to be tall or whatever. I think there's one for everyone. Like you could, you know, you can play table tennis, you can do curling, you're going to meet people.
Yeah.
And you're going to build ships.
Curling is so random.
Yeah. I'm just trying to go the ranges of the spectrum.
Yeah, but I guess we're talking from a perspective where we've enjoyed doing sport.
Like, and we also, again, it goes back to the support. Yeah. We've had the support from our parents to get when we're
young. Some people just aren't bothered. Like, remember, like, you know, the guys who are just walking around, like, in PE, like, they just don't want to do it.
Yeah,
you know when you have to
hear
a run,
each other with hockey sticks.
Yeah,
and
they just don't want to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Like, it's like, oh, sorry, sir, I forgot my PE kit.
Yeah,
like it's in the bag.
Yeah,
they didn't do swimming when they were young, so they don't have the discipline.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So I would have probably been like that if I didn't play any sport.
Yeah. Did you enjoy doing sport when you first started, or was it a bit of a like?
For me, I enjoyed football. I enjoyed. I didn't particularly enjoy rugby.
Yeah.
Because, like, I like to get stuck in, but it was like Sunday morning. I just wanted to lie in.
Yeah.
And you got to, like, when you can't feel your fingers and you're having to, like, grab someone and pull them down.
Yeah.
Football was great. love football, but I was just not that good at it. Swimming, we obviously did it loads, but I think it was mainly like my parents a lot of the time forcing me to do it. Yeah. Until maybe I got a bit older and I realised this is good, you know, it's getting me places or whatever. But yeah, I didn't really enjoy the swimming side of it. The only good, I didn't even enjoy the competitions that good, because I wasn't that amazing. I was getting whooped every time.
I think we were similar in the sense that we were more trainers. We were more trainers than
racers.
Yeah,
we enjoyed the hard work.
Yeah.
We were generally, because together we just do like extra sessions and stuff together.
Oh, really?
We were more hard, enjoying the hard work and the graft of it than the actual racing and stuff.
And we did have a laugh at training as well. Like, that was more towards the end though. Like, when we were kids, it's almost like, you know, you're going out with your mates, your mum tells you you have to come back to go train.
Yeah.
It's like, how come it's me doing this and no one else?
Yeah.
But when...
And it's in summer and it's sweltering hot. You've been out at Marco all day.
Yeah, yeah.
And I go home and I need to go to Repton to do a 4-6 swimming session and
you're
I'm just dead.
Ballon d'Or on Mark Eaton Park.
Yeah.
All you want to do is celebrate. And you have to go into the Loughborough swimming pool and do that horrible Sunday night session.
I've just won 4v4 MVP.
Yeah, and it's just... some of those 4v4 so are insane. Yeah.
Just had a massive Sunday roast. Next thing, you have to go...
Go to Loughborough and do 2 hours of pool.
No, it teaches you so much because you hate it.
I think swimming specifically is one of those, like, it's so grindy. And it's the same with rowing. And I bet that's why people love it even more at interviews. Like, it has that reputation. Like, everyone knows swimmers is like... early mornings, long hours, how many lengths you're getting in, and rowing is just literally who can like grind themselves out the most. So I think that's, I feel like you've always been like that. You've always liked to grind out.
I like to have something that I can like work hard at.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm happiest when I've got something that I can just like work hard at. As soon as I don't have anything to work hard at, I'm like, I just feel lost.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean?
Do you feel like you almost lack a bit of purpose when you've got nothing? And I'm a person that I struggle to sit and watch a movie. My housemates will watch one till 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Because sometimes most nights of the week.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm losing time. I think maybe because I'm an editor and I get paid by time. I'm thinking my time is so productive. I'm thinking this hour now I could be doing this. I could be editing this podcast. I'm not just going to sit there and waste time. That's something I can do later on in that.
That's interesting.
That's exactly how I feel. And I'm not going to lie. It's out there. Please, there'll be a 2-hour movie on.
Yeah.
And I'll just be like, I could be editing the podcast. I could be doing this. I could be doing a session. I could be doing that. I find it so hard to just sit down and enjoy what I'm doing there and there. But I think it's so important to be able to do that.
Yeah.
No. Otherwise, time's going to go and you're going to look back thinking, what the fuck have I done?
This is a very good time doing this. Anyway.
I was almost bringing this up with Shay earlier. And I was thinking about, if there is any like negatives to sport, right? And I wonder if like you are in this mindset where there's always something more, like, and there's never, because that's probably what drove a lot of us to get better, is this relentless pursuit of like need to be better. But I find myself like that now in life. Like after I got my job, I was getting promoted, but I was like, what's next? It's not good enough. Like, the day I got this job was like the best day of my life, honestly. I was borderline crying on my I was cycling home and I was just like laughing. Like, it was mental. You know the pursuit of happiness? That was me. I was going out like, I was walking out. Everyone was walking past me. My hands over my head. I was going back. My son was going to eat. Like, it was mental.
And he still didn't call me. Yeah. That's mad.
I swear I did call you.
No, I think you did. I did call you. I'm joking.
That is one movie I'd sit there and
watch. Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Pursuit of happiness. Yep. It's like, I wonder sometimes if our brains are wired in a way, or we've trained it in a way where you just... always pushing for that next thing, which is good. But like, I remember one of my regrets, said a little bit earlier, but like, looking back, maybe you guys feel the same way, but there would have been like peaks of your career that you had no idea. You blew straight past them. You had no idea that was going to be a peak. You had no idea that was going to be your best result, because at the time I was just sat like on the second place going, fucking hell, I played so bad in that final. I can't believe I'm this shit. And I'm, you know, like, I've literally just got to the final of European Championships, and only until I was like 19, 20 could I go like, oh yeah, that was really, really sick.
I think by that time,
you're like,
you're gone.
Yeah.
I think it is something you learn as you get older though, because recently at least over the past 2 or 3 years, I've started realizing that even more, because I'll be laying in bed at night, like trying to fall asleep. You know, there's nights where you can't fall asleep, and I'm just thinking.
This will
like,
be one hot day. Yeah. Hot day
and,
today.
And I just look back and I'm like, in my head, it feels like yesterday I was at sixth form prom. Feels like yesterday I was doing my first day at uni. Feels like yesterday I was graduating from uni. Time goes so fast. Yeah. And I think that's something that I'm happy I realized before I went to Brooks. Like that whole year, although I didn't enjoy like 6 months of it because it was too cold and rainy. Like that last month before Henley, I was like, even to the people in my crew, to the people in my crew, I was like, you guys need to enjoy this last month as much as you can, because even in a month and a half's time, you're going to look back on this last month and wish you could do it all.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you just need to make sure you make the most of those times.
Yeah, I have it. I know you were talking about like laughing and like shouting when you're on your bike or whatever.
Yeah.
I actually do that a lot.
Yeah.
Like when I'm coming back and I've had a good day at work, I might have left the office at 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. Like it's not good in the grand scheme of things, but I had a great day and I made good work or whatever. And it's chucking it down with rain.
Yeah.
I'm there. I've got music playing out loud because there's no one around.
Yeah.
And I go over the bridges. You know, when you go over a bridge and you just see the skyline.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's almost like, yes, I've made it. I just go, yes, come on.
You know what? I relate to that. I relate to that in a ridiculous way.
Yes, I'm just smiling all up.
But I think that's such a, like, maybe it's because we didn't grow up in London.
Exactly.
But like, I know that feeling, and I know like, when I came here and everyone was like, I hate the tube and hate this. I remember just being on the tube like,
this is
like
cool.
I fucking made it. Yeah. Look at me in my shirt. Look at me on like fuck well. Yeah. You know, so I think.
Because I don't even live here and I barely come in. Every time I come in, I'm like, I'm the guy.
Yeah.
It's like, because we came from Derby, London. Before I came to work, I've probably been two or three times on like family holidays or down for a weekend. Yeah. But like, it feels like it's so far away when you're at school.
It's a different,
it's just a different world.
Yeah, it's a completely different world. But I do just get that like childish, just like Big Ben,
when we were riding into London, I stayed at Joel's the other week because when we filmed with Gus, I stayed over at Joel's house. And in the morning, I grabbed a Lime bike.
First
time ever on a Lime bike. Biked from Clapham to Paddington.
Are you Lime biking it? You came here on a Lime bike, didn't you?
I came here on a Lime bike because I knew I was on the client side today. So if I'm going there, I obviously can't get my bike.
Yeah.
And then...
Are you blowing through red lights or not?
I'm going through red lights.
Yeah.
Professionally, no.
No, professionally, no. I had a couple crashes.
Really?
Early on in my biking career in London, like early on, like the first month. Yeah. Two crashes, one where my bike snapped in half. Cue the photo. Yeah, that's the one.
Oh my God, I've got a good bike story. Cue the photo.
Yeah. So, the first one, I was going down a hill, brakes didn't work.
Yeah.
Lorry pulls out of a junction.
Yeah.
I have an electric bike at this point.
Oh, crap.
I managed to slow it down enough, but it was almost comical the way I like splattered against the back of the lorry.
That's so sad.
But because it was an electric bike, the wires of the bike hooked onto the lorry. I'm still on my feet. The lorry drives off with my bike attached.
That's mental.
And I'm there waving behind the lorry.
You'd have picked up a charge for that.
Exactly. And then the second time, it was a Brompton. I got it off my great granddad, who brought it for his wife, who's probably 85. She can't walk, so it was unused. 100 kg lad, whipping around London on that Brompton, up and down curbs. That's... Like I saw the
image of you on a Brompton is quite funny.
Yeah, I saw a green light turn into red. You know how they have the hinge in the middle?
Yeah,
going down the curb must have done something to the hinge.
Yeah,
because I was at full pace and the whole bike snapped in half. Like,
oh my God!
Handlebars away from
that's mental.
All scraped up
I think
my
you
leg.
Called me after that.
I didn't have my phone. Yeah. It was one day I forgot my phone. So I had to get someone to take pictures. They were like, oh, for your insurance, you should take pictures.
Yeah.
They send it, I only know my mum's number. Yeah. So they send it to my mum. Yeah. Next minute, my mum's obviously received this text of my bike snapped in half. No message from me. Now
she'd have been worried. Like
so I have to somehow get these two halves of a bike onto a bus with all blood down my knee.
Oh my God,
they were like, all right, fine, get on. I get them to my housemates. I'm like, oh, you're back? Yeah. bring back this bike.
That's and, mental.
Yeah, but sure.
Nah.
There was a positive out of the story. They gave me a brand new one of the...
Brompton.
Yeah, brand new bike. So, yeah.
No, I feel like... I remember when I first started cycling in London, I was so careful. Like, I'd even, like, leave my bike at office if it was, like, dark or something. I wouldn't cycle in the dark. But now I'm just, like, I'm terrible. Like, now I'm just, like, zipping through, like, no brakes.
You get good, though,
don't you? Yeah, yeah, mate.
Tell us about that story about the bike.
I used to lock my bike up outside work in St. Paul's. And, yeah.
That's risky.
I mean,
outside of work, not
yeah,
in work. You know,
yeah, I didn't know. Well, I used to lock up. I used to use like three locks. I used to do like wheel to the bike to the post, wheel to the bike to the post, and like the like between the two locks as well. And they're all like these D locks or whatever. So I'm like proper hefty stuff. But it was like this light blue Canyon, so like really appealing. So I've come out one day and I've just come up to my bike and. Someone snipped my handlebars, and they've taken it for the shifters. They've unscrewed the top of my bike and just taken my handlebars.
No.
Yeah. They've taken my handlebars with my shifters because they're like SRAM shifters, and you can sell them for like 100 quid or so. So I've just had to like get on the tube at like rush hour with a bike. People are like, what are you doing? And they're like, people are getting angry with me. Like, why you brought your bike on the tube? I'm like, look at it. What do you want me to do? And I'm more angry than you, I promise you. So get out of my face. Like, but yeah, it was mental. But yeah, I went to try and get it fixed as well. But because it's all like internal wiring, like it's going to cost you like £600 or so to get this, you know, the parts and the labor to do all the wiring. So I sold it to a chap who was like a mechanic. And then he was like, oh, I know it's not worth like the money for parts, but I think it's a really nice bike. I'm going to put it back together. A few weeks later, he sends me a photo. The exact same things happened to him. He's like, I'm sat in a cafe now and I've just watched someone do like snip it and steal them. So it must happen a lot. It must happen a lot.
Because I've heard stories about people being in shops in London and they've got their bike locked up outside. Next thing you know, two or three lads in masks rock up, snipping their bike off.
Yeah.
And obviously, you're sat in that shop. You're not going to go out and get your bike because those three lads in those masks are going to—they're going to do you. But
from now on, it's only in office or at home. Yeah.
Well, I've never locked my bike outside of the office.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know. It's gone. I know people that have locked their bike up really well, and instead of just giving up when they've had a go, they will just wreck your bike.
Yeah.
They'll stamp the wheels in.
Yeah.
They'll do it really? Like they're angry. Yeah. They'll just stamp it in. If they can't get anything out of it, they'll just wreck it.
You know, I. But when I first moved to London, I had no idea. I locked up my bike outside of Core once. I went to Core for afters. Not for afters, for Thursday drinks. And I was like, obviously, I can't cycle home. I'm blasted. So I just left it there. And then I think I picked it up like the next day or on like Monday or on the weekend. It was fine.
For the listeners, if you live in London, you know how ludicrous that is.
Well, I just locked it up outside Core. I was like, oh, okay.
If you don't live in London, Core is almost like a night. On a Thursday night, it's the night to go out after work in London. Yeah. And there's a place called Core Bar. Shout out to Core Bar. It's a great place.
No, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. That's
Core Bar, everyone goes there after. It's like a music. That whole street's like a music festival. Everyone's there. You know, everyone's chatting, having a good time. The last thing you think of is to lock your bike outside of Core Bar.
It's so central, like, but yeah, so I got away with it.
Yes, it was a miracle they were still there.
I think so. I don't
still
know.
There?
Yeah, it was fine. I left it over the weekend, I think.
Maybe because it was so busy.
Yeah, maybe. But St. Paul's is
maybe people
busy as well.
Thought it was a trap.
Yeah.
Because it's right in front of everyone. They might just think it's a trap. But right, now we're coming towards the end. I kind of just want to ask you a few more questions.
Yeah.
So we always ask this question on every podcast.
Yeah.
What is the hardest session you've done?
So the hardest sessions for us would have been, so there's two sessions that are notably tough. One of them is Maltese, which I'm going to try and give you guys a little taste of today. And the other one's like testing day. So testing day is like when you're on the program, it's like once a year, they would just go and like push you to your physical limits. So you'd essentially get a bunch of exercises that are timed. And the one on that was the most difficult was this one. I think what you had was like 10 shuttles on each side of the court. And essentially all you're doing is like knocking them all down as quick as you can. And you just do that 10 times with like, I don't know, 15, 20 seconds break in the middle. And that was the grimmest thing, because like you're always lunging, your bum's like completely like burning. But that one was the one, because like everyone's going at the same time as well. So you're competing against everyone. They go beep. And then there's like 20 of your kids who are all like, you know, all trying to compete for program slots, and you're just all ragging yourself left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. And then, yeah, I remember like, yeah, plenty of people would end up like thrown up or like.
It's so interesting because it's so different to what we're used to. Yeah. Obviously, you had experience in swimming, but
yeah,
doing that sort of stuff where it's like lunging and running around and you have to have agility.
Yeah.
We're so used to being able to just heavy hand it
and
not need any agility at all. Yeah. All I need to do is pull hard or like pull hard.
Yeah.
I don't need to have any like finesse or anything like that.
The big difference is that for us, you do get these little breaks, right? So a lot of the time you're going like max effort and then taking like, I don't know, 10 seconds in the middle. Whereas you're never really doing that in swimming. Like there's no need to do that kind of training. But yeah, so you have to recycle yourself up every, and the other one's like multis is just essentially you have maybe like, I don't know, like 500, 800 shuttles, and you're just doing these patterns, and like you're doing like full power smashes, jump out smashes, and you're just doing like 20 of them, take 10 seconds and then go again. But you like your coaches and everyone expects you to go like 90% or like max effort, take 15 seconds and then do it again, and do it for like 20 sets. And it's just like, we had a lot of coaches who would do, this was so annoying, they used to do like a set, and then, I don't know if you've had this, but then they'll just go, oh yeah, you got like 5 more. You got like 10 more, and then you get to the end of it, oh, you got 5 more.
Yeah, we used,
and it's just like, bro, like, is that mental, like.
I don't know if you have the same coach as us, not naming any names, but we used to finish a really hard set.
Yeah.
You'd be blowing knackered at the end, and he'd just go, go over there if you want to swim down.
Yeah.
Stay on this half if you want to keep going with the hard stuff.
Okay. You know,
people had split up. And they go, you know what? Because you've gone to swim down, you're doing the hard stuff. And because you've gone to carry on trying, you're swimming down and getting out.
Yeah.
Just playing games like that.
You know what? Like back then I used to hate it, but now I think it makes a lot of sense.
Again, it's the teaching you those lessons. I think
it makes sense that like you just have to go again. Like you just have to, like I think it makes so much sense. Back then I was like, you fucker. Like there's so many things you think like back then you used to hate, but as you get older, you're like, oh yeah, it does make sense. I remember this coach that gave me like 20 laps once because I was on time. Like if you were late, you used to get laps. I was on time, but he didn't like my attitude and how finely I cut it. And he gave me 20 laps because he was like, you were just like waiting to get here right on time, weren't you?
Yeah.
Gave you 20. Yeah, of course I was. Of course I was. But I was like, I hated him so
much. That's such a new thing to do as well. Yeah. Like, you get there five minutes early, but you're waiting for like 6:59, 58.
Yeah.
Then you walk in the door.
Yeah.
But that's such a David thing to do.
Because in the gyms, they always have the digital clocks as well. Yeah, so you can just do it for the second.
Yeah.
Right. Some quick fire sessions for you then, David. Who's your favourite athlete?
Donna Kellogg. She's a badminton player.
Okay, who's their
player? She played for England. She was like a coach for a bit, and she said like, my biggest thing or that I could say about my career is like when I hung up my racket, I left every single thing on the court every session. And that used to go through my head all the time. I was like, I don't know if it's true, but if it is, that's such a thing to be able to say. Like every session. I don't know if I can say that. I don't know if you guys can, but like to be able to say that, I think was really cool. That really inspired me.
If you could be in one sports team, be part of that team, what would the team be?
Any sports team. I don't know. Get hate if I say Golden State. You know.
What 2015?
Yeah,
Golden
2015.
State.
I reckon. Oh. I reckon off the bench. Clutch free. Well, I don't know. Or like Bulls, Chicago Bulls. That would be amazing.
Yeah, fair enough. So you know,
me and Pippen at the club afterwards. I don't know. I think that would be mental. Yeah, no. 96 Bulls. Yeah. Got to be.
Fair enough. That's on it.
Me, MJ, and Pippin at the club.
Look, if you have one nugget of advice for people just starting in sport or going through their sports journey, what would it be?
Like, maybe take... I don't know, it's such a difficult one, but... Like, appreciate the wins, I'd say. Like, appreciate the wins. Appreciate the good times. Like, take a moment. Just, like, we get it. You're going to be, like, working super hard and all that. But, yeah, take a moment. Enjoy it. Because, yeah.
Fair. And then the same about the city, like, starting work, career-wise.
I would say... The more, like, I think it's like a knowledge problem. Like, at least it was for me. I just didn't know enough. As in, like, do more research, ask more questions, speak to more people. Like, if you can speak to people and understand different areas of businesses, and, like, that's going to save you a lot of time. Because I feel like I'm now finding about things about in finance, whereas a lot of people, even at uni, were already, like, doing all these internships. I had no idea about that. But, like, it's still the same game now, that the more you know, the more areas of corporate you know, the more opportunities you have, I'd say, just like, yeah.
Right. David, thanks for coming on, mate.
No worries.
Lovely to see you again.
Lovely to see you.
We're going to do a quick badminton session.
Yeah.
Take us for a quick spin. But
40 minutes.
If you're watching, thanks for watching. We'll see you in the next one.